This is the Children's Hour, and this is the Grateful Dead. Of the Children's Hour, and today on the show we're learning about watersheds, and part of watersheds that's very important is the forests that they originate in. Well, let's find out from our friends at the New Mexico Forest and Watershed Restoration Institute, what does a healthy forest look like? How do we know we're in a healthy forest?
Yeah, I'm going to say this again, but it depends on the forest type. For example, here in New Mexico, we see a lot of ponderosa pine forests. Historically, when we look at images of ponderosa pine forests, say from 100 plus years ago, we notice that trees are a lot more spread apart. We find a diversity of age in trees, and we find trees that have a larger diameter or width. One way to tell whether a forest is healthy is by looking at the trees and looking at whether or not the trees themselves are healthy. And so a healthy tree will be a good indicator of a healthy forest. In an unhealthy forest, you may find trees that are a lot more closer together, that are very dense, something that we call a dog hair thicket, because it's almost like dog hair where it's so thick, it's almost hard to kind of pass through. But those trees, if we look at them, we'll notice that they're very thin, and it's almost like they've been deprived of a lot of the nutrients that they need in order to grow.
You mean their trunks are skinny?
Yes, exactly. So we'll see skinnier trees, and we'll look across a forest landscape, and we'll notice a lot of times that we're finding trees that are around the same age as well. And what happens is when you have a forest that's very dense with trees, it's easier for disease to spread. So think of being in a classroom where everyone is really close together and then one person coughs. That is going to be a lot easier to spread to other people versus if people are further apart from one another. And so the same goes for trees. And trees need their space, especially ponderosa pines. Another way to tell if a forest is healthy is looking at the wildlife. What type of wildlife are we finding in that forest? What type of plant species are we finding in that forest as well? So we like our forest to be very diverse. We don't want to have just one type of grass or one type of tree, one type of flower. We want different types because it'll attract different types of wildlife as well.
How do animals know when to come back after a forest has healed?
I think when their food comes back, that's when they come back. And so usually if you have a low severity fire and then you have light or good rains afterwards, we'll notice that some plants come back pretty quickly. And that's a good invitation for some wildlife to come back into the forest and take advantage of that, those fresh green plants.
When a fire does come, okay, I know a lot of people say, you know, hey, it's mean, it's this big nasty thing, but it's really not that nasty. It's doing its job, okay? Fire has a purpose. It's cleaning up this area that needed it. It actually calls for it because some of those trees are sick. They're competing for nutrients. They're competing for food. And when fire comes, it makes this gateway of this entrance of space. So when they have this space, animals love going in there. They feel like it's like the best way because why? They get to be in a place where they could eat good, where they could, you know, have a little bit of privacy, you know, because animals like to be together. So when they come in, they do a selective browsing. And when I'm talking about when trees do fall, okay, when there's a tree that's down on the ground, or even if by fire it just fell down, they'll go around that. And that green up's coming in thicker on one area. So that leaves patchiness. And that's what you want. Because just by that selective eating or selective grazing or selective browsing, you have these patches inside an environment where it was like, oh, hey, you know, we're getting up some of these grasses that we really need, and that area is getting it, even though, you know, the animals missed it. But yes, it's really nutritional. They love it.
That's Raimundo Melendez. We are learning about watersheds today from the New Mexico Forest and Watershed Restoration Institute. This is the Albuquerque band, Wagogo.
There's beauty all around me.
Right here on the Children's Hour.
There's beauty all around me. There's beauty all around me. Hello, beautiful. Hello, hello, hello. Hello, beautiful, 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 beautiful. You are beautiful, just like the rainbows made from living water. Made us out of water. Very air we breathe. Living water, like the rainbows in the sky. We're beautiful, beautiful. There's beauty all around me. 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 Chanting with a drum,
that all things might live, and with beauty all around. May the moss upon the misty mountains drip with living water. May the blanket of green spread across the earth, which is our mother, with her pollen and her flowers and her colors of the summertime. Come, there'll be frost flowers growing on the mountain. May the blanket of ice unfold, cover up the country. May the trees lean to one side, heavy with the snow. May the flesh of Mother Earth crack open from the cold, cold. So in the springtime, there'll be fresh and living waters in the rivers and the streams flowing out into the valleys. And yonder in our watered fields, the sources of our flesh, all the different crops standing in the earth, arms stretched out to the daylight of the sun who is our father, calling for the rain, singing, come from where you dwell, little wind-blown cloud, thin wisp of cloud, streaks of low-hanging cloud, masked up clouds full of living water, caress the land with rain, bless this land with rain, rainbow.
That's Peggy Seeger right here on the Children's Hour. Today on the show, we are learning about watersheds and what happens after wildfires. Our guests are from the New Mexico Forest and Watershed Restoration Institute.
How does climate change affect the work you do?
There's a lot of work to be done.
because fires are becoming, I call it bigger and badder. That's not really a scientific term, but the formal term is uncharacteristic wildfire. So we're seeing fire in places that have never had it before, like in Arctic ecosystems, and the fires that we're having in places like New Mexico forests, where fire should be a common occurrence, the fires are burning at higher severity and having more impacts, where they're killing more trees and generally covering more ground.
Yeah, and for a lot of organizations that are engaging in this restoration work, they have to do a lot of planning before they step on the ground and they start their restoration work. And climate change is adding a lot of unknowns and a lot of questions when it comes to planning. And so a lot of times when planning, you have to think about what are the weather conditions going to be like on a particular day. And you may plan ahead for that, but once you go out into the field and you step into the forest that day, the conditions could be completely different. And so we're dealing with a lot of unknowns. It's also making it so that us humans are having to collaborate more with each other and to learn from one another and share information so that we're better able to adapt to these changing conditions.
Here in the forests of the Mountain West, we have ponderosa pines. They're beautiful. If you put your nose up against the bark of a ponderosa pine, it smells like butterscotch. But now that climate change is going to make, say, this area in New Mexico and in the Southwest so much warmer, and maybe now it's not such a hospitable place anymore for ponderosa pines, does that mean our forests are going to look totally, completely different after forest fire?
Yes. One of the things that's happening around the world is that fire, particularly high severity fire, forests are being replaced with shrublands because the conditions that existed when those trees first established no longer exist. That's one of the biggest problems. Even fire aside, one of the schools of thought is that we should be trying to help put forests where they're going to be better adapted. So that's called assisted migration.
You mean like replant a whole forest somewhere else because it's a better place for that forest?
Some of it might be like following a fire in a place that was ponderosa pine, let's say on a south-facing slope that's somewhat dry. Should we replant ponderosa pine or should we replant pinon and juniper that might do better on that site? Particularly once the trees are gone in this environment, it becomes hotter and drier because you get so much more evaporation once you don't have that tree canopy to shade stuff anymore. So things like white bark pine that grow at high elevation are falling off the top of the mountain essentially because there's nowhere else for them to go, that it's just getting totally inhospitable in their environment.
That's Dr. Krista Bonfantin from the New Mexico Watershed and Forest Restoration Institute. They're our guests today on the Children's Hour as we're learning about watersheds and what happens to our watersheds after a forest fire. All of us have watersheds in our own yards and everywhere we go, and there's a lot we can do to protect them. We've got a lot more to learn. Stick with us.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Thanks to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for hosting the Children's Hour. Support for the Children's Hour is provided by United Way of North Central New Mexico. Support provided by the City of Albuquerque and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund. Support for the Children's Hour provided by the County of Bernalillo, New Mexico. Many thanks to the users at tokenibis.org, who direct funds to the Children's Hour every week. Keep up with the Children's Hour and subscribe to our monthly newsletter at childrenshour.org.